Sometimes your heartbeat and breathing may distract and prevent you from sinking down the well. Though you endeavor to go deeper, the mind fixes itself on the heart or the breathing, and you remain stuck there until it tires of it. Getting past these two, especially the heartbeat, which often becomes very noticeable when you're trying to get to sleep at night, depends a good deal on overcoming the mind's habitual curiosity. The mind is always looking for something inside or outside to latch onto. Which brings us to the next set of exercises. Meditation is not just a matter of entering your body. That's only half of it. The other half involves becoming more conscious of the way you perform and react to the world. Take the habit of useless curiosity. Say you are walking down the street and someone behind shouts in a loud voice. Everyone looks around. Why? Habit or curiosity? Did you really think the shout was for you? No. You just turned around without being aware of what you were doing. And if you turned out of curiosity, why did you need to know what was going on? Similarly, if there is an accident and a curious crowd is gathering, why should you want to join in to witness or know about another's misfortune? By participating in this so-called harmless curiosity, you give the mind the power to distract you. Another helpful exercise is to refuse to count the chimes of a clock while still hearing them. The mind, you will notice, automatically counts the strikes. Also, when people are conversing around you and you're not involved, such as in a doctor's waiting room or a bus, try letting the words pass through your head without translating them. This all helps to give you mind control. We are all creatures of habit, but some habits are more a useless waste of energy than others, and it's those we want to rid ourselves of by intelligent observation, so we can use the energy more effectively to find ourselves. From this moment on, you've got to start being more aware of your involuntary physical actions and to cease the ones you obviously don't need. You have to name them for yourself, but I would suggest you are wasting energy habitually when you allow your fingers to drum on the table or desk, when you fiddle with anything, tap your foot, talk aimlessly, make phone calls that have no real purpose, and so on. In short, endeavor to stay aware. You'll soon discover plenty of ground for habit breaking. Things we accept in ourselves as harmless or natural, because we haven't looked at them intelligently, are often behind our negative moods and depressions. Take worry, for instance. Nothing is more punishing and destructive than worry. Yet worry is only another name for undisciplined thinking. Worry is the penalty for imagining that thinking is harmless. Let me explain, for this is crucial to successful meditation as well as to your new peace of mind. To worry is to be unable to stop thinking about a matter that's disturbing you. If you could stop thinking about it, you wouldn't be worried. You might still feel a kind of background heaviness or dull ache, but the pain behind the worry only recurs when you touch it with thinking, by remembering it. The question is, of course, How can you possibly stop thinking when you're worried? Well, first you've got to make the effort to give up thinking when you're not worried. And this is what you do. From now, you resolve not to think about what you did yesterday, or even 5 minutes ago, what you said, where you went, what you saw, what someone else said. In other words, you give up thinking about the past as a self-amusement. You can't expect to stop thinking in bad times, which is worry, if you allow your mind the same thinking freedom in good times. Even to lie in bed thinking about a movie or play you've just seen, or a lovely day out with a friend, is to encourage the mind to do precisely the same thing when next you have a problem, and to keep you awake with worry. So no more daydreaming or thinking about the good times or the bad times. It means only that you'll be living more in the present. And what's wrong with that? How often and for how long should you meditate? At least twice a day, and for at least 15 minutes a sitting. Preferably, before you go to work and when you come home. But you'll gradually get into a routine of your own, although be careful it doesn't become another habit. Vary the times. And there's no reason, if you have the time, why you shouldn't sit and meditate 6 times a day for as long as you like. The important thing is not to put it off. And remember, just as important as sitting is remembering to practice the other techniques such as habit breaking and not thinking about the past. Although it will take time learning to apply all the techniques of this meditation, a period of years if necessary, each stage can be mastered in your own time, and then you can move on to the next stage. A sense of urgency is valuable, but there should be no sense of rush. Gradually, meditation will become a total life activity. This is possible because meditation puts you back in contact with life. Let me explain. People confuse life with living. But life and living are two different things. Living is the world. Life is the earth. Living is the superstructure that we, as humanity, have erected on life, on ourselves. Living is hard, at its best, not easy. Living is trying to cope with the world, an impossibility, so we all compromise to get by. Living is compromise, settling for the best you think you can obtain. Life, on the other hand, is beautiful. Life begins with nature and ourselves. You don't have to compromise with life. It's just there, in you and around you. You are only unhappy when you're trying to contend with living. You don't have to compromise or make allowances to hear the birds, to see the beauty of the trees, the sky, the grass, the animals around you. You just have to be alive. Total life is love. But unfortunately, love at present is only a very small part of living. When you're in love, you're not worried about what the world might or might not do to you. You couldn't care less. While you are in love, you are in contact with life and you are alive. Life is all that is beautiful and natural. The trouble is we've got into the habit of thinking that living is natural. Living is not natural. That's what makes it so darn difficult. I suggest now that you take 3 rhythmic deep breaths to your own timing, and we will start meditating again. I will lead you into meditation using all the main techniques in the order I have given them to you. This will help you to remember them when you're meditating alone. So you have taken your breaths. You're sitting upright, eyes closed, with the corners of your mouth raised in a slight smile. Put the attention on the point between the eyebrows. See the grainy blackness and gather yourself there. Relax. Now move the attention down to the hands, feeling the energy inside them, not visualizing them. Don't move the attention until you have a good apperception of the energy in the hands. Take your time. Now the lips. Make sure the corners are up. Feel the energy, the fine tingling. Next, the nose. The feet. Keep smiling. Toes. Ankles. Relax. Take your time. Make sure you feel the energy in each part before going on. The knees. The back. Shoulders. The shoulders, of course, are one of the easiest places to feel tension, because we all tend to store tension there. When you feel tension in the shoulders or anywhere, remember to let it go, to allow it to drop down towards the pit of the stomach. As you go still, you will actually feel the tension draining down and the shoulders settling into a more relaxed and natural position. Now finally, put the attention on the back of the head. Here you may also feel some tension or tightness that has risen up from the shoulders. Drop it down. Let it drain into the stomach. Every time you have a row or argument, you may have noticed that the emotion of it lingers in your stomach below the solar plexus. The emotion is like a continuation of the dispute inside you, and it forces you to think over and over all that was said, as well as a lot that wasn't and you'd wished you'd said. Frequently, the emotion makes you fabricate a completely new and favourable dialogue with which you tease and entertain yourself. From now on, however, as a serious student of this meditation, you have to make more constructive use of such situations. They have to be treated as opportunities to get to know yourself better, to clear out the nonsense, and to go deeper down into the unconscious. This is what you do, and this is a most important exercise. Next time you have a row, you resist as much as possible the urge to think about what happened. By thinking, unless it is necessary to help you to take action, you are merely playing emotional games, indulging yourself. Unless you intend to act, there is no excuse whatever for thinking, and certainly not for brooding. So next time you have a row, get on your own. Sit down if you can. Treat it as a meditation. Gather yourself between the eyebrows. Take several deep, long, diaphragmic breaths. They are crucial on these occasions. Center your attention on the emotion in your stomach. This will help to keep the mind occupied, as it will be straining to think. Hold the emotion by examining the sensation of it, just as you have learned to hold and identify the tingling sensation in the other parts of your body. Each time you catch yourself thinking, start again. Take more deep breaths. Don't allow the chest to rise. And go straight back to the emotion in your stomach. Don't think. Hold the emotion. Enter it. Be the emotion. Suffer it. Be the pain. Groan if it helps. But don't try to escape it by thinking. Don't walk around. Don't move. Bear it as long as you can. You have to rid yourself of this alien thing by confronting it, burning it out of you. If you think about it, talk about it, move because of it, you are running from it, running from the discomfort and pain. Don't be fooled. It is using you. You can get rid of it this way, forever. If you don't face up to it now, as most people don't, it will be back tomorrow, next month, or next year to torment and agonize you again. Only then it will have joined up with all your other unresolved emotional conflicts and will make you feel more wretched and miserable. It's because we don't face up to emotions that we accumulate all negative feelings, as well as those deadening dark layers of false self I mentioned at the beginning. After each emotional blow, we deaden or desensitize part of ourselves so we won't feel the pain as severely next time. And of course, the self-protective crust that builds up has the side effect of making us feel enclosed and cut off from the vibrance of life. So you can see how important it is to face up to our emotions. By using the attention to hold the sensation of the emotion, you gradually dissolve the emotion. By refusing to think, you actually starve it, deny it life. Think, and you immediately revive it. Isn't that true? Next time you've got an emotional crisis on your hands, you check. It hurts only when you remember it by thinking about it. Are you in meditation? Place your attention on the stomach area. What do you feel? Is there a disturbance there? Something distracting you? If so, it's a relationship to something outside yourself. Something in the past? Something in the future? A demand made on you by others or by yourself? Place your attention upon it. Now, continue in meditation. After a few moments of silence, we shall go on to another stage. After you've had some success at handling your emotions, the next exercise follows almost naturally. But it will only work for you after you've made meditation or the search for truth a high priority in your life. Here is the exercise. There are now, locked up inside of you, as in a jail, a number of people. They are your psychological prisoners. Although a great deal of trouble to you, you are afraid to let them go. These are people you've been attached to, where emotion has entered the relationship. Mother, father, boss, wife, husband, children, former lovers, old school chums and the like. Whether alive or dead, still in contact or apparently forgotten, they live on in you as emotional entities. If you see, think, or dream about one of them, depending on the intensity of the relationship, up pops the old energy of the person or situation, and you are emotionally disturbed again. These emotions are searingly real in their effect on you, and yet they are phantoms. You have to release these emotional prisoners. This is what you do. Without waiting for crossed relationships to grapple with, sit in meditation in the ordinary way. Take some breaths. Lift the corners of the lips. Put the attention on the abdomen. Your specific intention is to free anyone, any negative feeling against another, you might have locked up inside of you as a result of past ignorance or attitude. For example, it might be the feeling that your mother or father failed you at some time in your life. Let the person, the feeling, go. Let's say it's your father. Smile. Forgive him. With love, not necessarily with love for him, but just love or goodwill. See that all you've been holding on to was your own self-centered expectation of what a father should be. If he was not a good father, so what? It's all behind you, and all the more reason not to hold on to him. The truth is, he owed you nothing that he did not give. He gave what he could, all that his nature and conditioning allowed, just as you give. Any failure or denial was only life, your life at that time which you can now let go of. Liberate anyone, any feeling inside of resentment or grudge towards another. Name the person. Free them of any further demands from you. Say, I free you in love from any debt or blame I may have been holding over you. You owe me nothing. If it helps, visualize bars being dissolved in your stomach and every emotion you ever harbored regarding others flying out of your body like shadows, going where they may, free at last of your holding and concealing. Any emotional entities you find trying to stay around, shoo away, saying to yourself, be free, be gone. There is nowhere left here for you to hide. I am empty, emptied. Do all this with a sense of love, of giving. Imagine yourself returning all that you ever held back and becoming more and more emptied and transparent. By giving and loving in this way, you are surrendering your old self, your old deadening emotional layers. You are being made new, fresh, alive. Now continue in meditation, holding the energy of what I have just said, the idea that you are being made new. You must get accustomed to using the inner feeling of your body to tell you what is going on in you at any moment. No more waiting for a pain or twinge like most people do to discover you've got a thriving inner reality. Your body within is a very sensitive receiving apparatus. Only you've got to learn how to get in there and read it. Any time you feel a tightness or heaviness in your stomach, you must not ignore it. It means something. You must apperceive what relationship is causing it and confront it. Apart from physical causes, you will always find a crossed relationship with someone or something behind stomach tension and agitation. Search out the relationship. Be honest. Don't cover up. Name it to yourself. Once you know the origin of an emotion, you feel less disturbed, less in the dark. And often you'll then see it to be so trivial that the disturbance just disappears. Now I want to tell you about the pygmy. I am not referring in any way to the pygmies of Africa. The pygmy I'm talking about lives in each one of us, is a little man or woman, a dwarfish and ugly part of each of us. It is a cunningly intelligent entity, stunted, tricky, shifty, knowing. If I call him he and you are a woman, you must call him she. The pygmy is no stranger to you. You might feel it's something I've dreamed up to make a point. But it's as real as you are, and in some ways your oldest friend. Let's see if you recognize him or her. The pygmy is the living past in you. You probably thought the past had gone like yesterday, but it hasn't. Not the past that caused you any emotional pain. That past lives on in you now as the pygmy. It consists of every disappointment since you were a child, every secret hurt, unfulfilled expectation, every unfounded assumption about life and living that wounded you. In other words, the pygmy is the lie or compromise you have allowed yourself to live, or were forced to live, when the truth of that emotional moment or situation should have been found by you or explained to you. That small dark body of accumulated emotional energy, which has never been intelligently examined, your ignorance, is alive in you and doing very well, thank you, as the pygmy. The pygmy is responsible for all your negative moods, fears, doubts, depression and unhappiness. He is your false self. The pygmy is also the glutton in you. If you want to meet him or her, then observe yourself the next time you are greedy for food, sex, drink, recognition, love, respect, anything. Try pulling back from your greed or walking away, and you'll soon feel the pygmy's fury. He'll quickly justify your appetite and debunk what I'm saying now as nonsense. But after he's had his fill, that is, after the particular moment of truth is past and you are left despondent and disliking yourself, you will know that what I'm saying is true. You cannot deceive yourself. You know when you've failed yourself, when the pygmy has won. The deceit is in choosing to ignore your real self, the intelligence in you who sees the truth. It is the pygmy that wants the last word in an argument and justifies that need. It is the pygmy that fantasizes about sex, using your memory to do so. It is the pygmy that wallows in thinking about grievances, insults and revenge, again using your memory. The pygmy lives in the memory, and it is he that does all your thinking about the past, the good times and the bad. Stop thinking, and he's practically homeless. The pygmy thrives on emotional excitement, good or bad. And he doesn't care about consequences. After he's indulged himself in the world, he leaves you to clean up the mess and to cope with the inner traumas. You might have noticed. Mastering the pygmy is a continuous exercise, a battle, which in the end you have to win. But when you fail in an encounter with him, don't despair. Before long, you'll have another opportunity to observe the way he uses you, and to withdraw from him if you can. The pygmy can't indulge himself without you. He has no physical body, only an emotional one, and no memory of his own, so he uses yours and feeds off you. The pygmy doesn't like the idea of your entering yourself. He may go along with your meditation for a while, but when he finds you are really serious, he'll fight furiously to keep you from putting the spotlight of intelligence, your attention, on him. Have you felt any pains while you were meditating? A sudden headache, perhaps? Or an unusual restlessness or resentment towards me? That was the pygmy, fearful and threatening. He is the only real enemy. The meditation I have outlined here is the beginning of the end of him. Nevertheless, he is at his fiercest and meanest when cornered. He will play on every weakness, especially doubt. He will undermine your faith and confidence when you are in fact doing well. And if he can, he'll persuade you to give up meditation altogether. I trust you persevere. Start meditating now and hold the pygmy at bay. Sit erect, check your breathing, and gather yourself in while I give you one final word. No talk of truth or finding yourself is complete without love. Love is the final word. Meditation has to be accompanied by a growing awareness of love, because love is only a giving up of your old dead self. When you're sitting in silence and hear a bird singing, allow the sound to enter your stomach area. Connect with it. It is fresh with life and will help to put you in touch with the love of life, your true self within you. Also, you must endeavor to love more in the world. It is no longer enough for you to say you love someone or something. That allows you to regard love as a static, finished thing, whereas love is an intensely active, ceaseless state of being. So say or feel, "I love you," only finish the sentence, "that I must love you more." And in that active commitment, you will grow in love and life. I wish you well. In love, I am with you.